Okay, so today we'll just cover Perek Daled, which, like I said, Perek Daled is mostly just listing the names of Shlomo's bureaucracy. But there are some interesting things hidden if you read the Prakim carefully. So it starts off, Vayhi Melech Shlomo Melech Al Kol Yisrael. So this was the culmination of the previous Perek, and that Shlomo is now successfully the king over all of Yisrael. Ve'elu Asarim Asher Lo. And these are his officers. The first one is Azariah ben Sado Kakohain. So the first one is this guy named Azariah. So one thing which Dot McGraw points out, which is telling, is that we have a list here of Shlomo's officers, and we have a list in Shmuel of David's officers. Now, David's first officer that's mentioned are his generals, right off the bat. His first, in his list of his cabinet, the first that are listed are his generals. It's Shmuel Bet Perek Chet Pasuk Tet Zion. So Dan Mikra already points out that the order in which you name your officers shows the focus of your government. Mm-hmm. Now David was an embattled king, right? First he was just establishing the kingdom from Shaul, but he was fighting enemies left, right, and center, so the most powerful people in his cabinet had to be the generals. But Shlomo has established peace. He's inherited basically a peaceful government. His army, as we'll see, is more of a deterrent army to prevent war from coming, but they're basically at peace, and therefore he focuses on more domestic policy, and specifically his first and foremost contribution to Klal Yisrael is going to be the building of the Beit HaMikdash. So his first officer, so to speak, his first cabinet member, is Azariah ben Sadok HaKohen. So
who was even, Tzadok was working
for so Tzadok, David, right, Tzadok was working for David, so this is the son of Tzadok. But already from the beginning, it's just a name, but the fact that a Kohen, which probably means Kohen, that it could technically mean leader, but probably means Kohen, is the first in his cabinet rather than the general. And the general for David, for Shlomo, is going to be a few later. It already seems to focus on the fact that Shlomo's kingdom is very different. So then we get Elicharaf, Achiah ben Eshishah Sofrim, Yoshafat ben Achilud Hamaskir. So then he has two Sofrim and one Mazkir, which are different types of royal scribes. It's not totally clear what the difference is, what types of laws they write. Are they accountants? Are they scribes of laws? But usually a sofer is one who formulates law, and a Mazkir is more of the accountant, is more of the detail keeper. Which again makes sense that he's very inward focused. So he's setting up laws, he's setting up a taxation system, which will be very important in a minute. So those people are front and center. The Beit HaMikdash with the Kohen, and then these bureaucrats who help set up the government. And then the fourth one is the general, right? So instead of in first place, general goes into fourth place. V'tzadok ve'aviatar kohanim. And Sadok and Aviatar are the Kohanim. Now, here is something which is fascinating. It's a bit ambiguous. Now, Aviatar was the Kohen that Shlomo had just fired, right, as the Kohen Gadol. And he'd fired him in the previous Prakim. And he'd appointed Sadok in his stead. So now Sadok is a Kohen, and Aviatar is also a Kohen. So it could be that this is a different Aviatar, and it just is a coincidence that that's his name. Or, as several have pointed out, maybe the greatness of Shlomo was that he was such a successful leader that even though he had demoted Aviatar from being the Kohen Gadol, still, under his rulership, both Tzadok and Aviatar worked for him. Right? They had to put aside their personal differences, they had to put aside their personal pride, and both of them had to work for him towards a common goal. And if, in fact, this is the same Eviatar, that's a real sign of strength, that he demoted Eviatar, and Eviatar still continues as an advisor in a different role, and even works with the person who replaced him, with Tzadok. That's already an impressive, it's impressive of accomplishment in terms of Shlomo's leadership.
So son and father were working for Shlomo.
Again, yeah, assuming it's the same Tzadok, but yeah, it seems to be. Right, assuming it's the same Tzadok. Well, yeah. So the simplest reason is that it's the same
and
one.
Vinayahu ben Yehuda was the guy that killed the other guy.
Yeah, now Vinayahu ben Yehuda worked for Shlomo, for David as well. Though with David, he hadn't been the head of the Tzava. And this is another interesting point. In the time of David, he was the head of the Kreti Upleti. So according to the Midrash, Kreti Upleti...
No, Chashirina, was it Kreti Upleti? Was it just...
So,
Urim and Tumim, no?
What? So, it's possible... Well, right, it's possible that it has religious significance. It might be the Sanhedrin, according to the Midrash. But the simplest understanding of it is that it was the special forces. It's like the... You know, the archers and the...
The Kreti Upleti.
And now David needed special forces again because he was a military leader. Even though Shlomo has a very impressive army as a deterrent, it's not an active army, and therefore there's no need. If the Kreti Upleti are the special forces, there's no need for special forces, right? The Sayeret Matkal, there's no need for that if you're not an active fighting. It's just a deterrent army. So then you have a standing army, but you don't need the special forces. So Vinayahu moves from being, as we saw, right? He's sort of Shlomo's private, in the early parts, he's Shlomo's private assassin. And now he's just in charge of the army. But then we get to the most of his bureaucracy, right? Now we're moving out of his cabinet. Most of his bureaucracy are tax collectors. Now this all sets up the beginning of Parakeh. The beginning of Parakeh, if you skip, tells you that Ushlomo aya moshel b'chol mamlecho b'na ha'aretz plishtim ha'gvul mitzrayim magishim mincha v'ovdim et Shlomo kol yimei chayav. Shlomo ruled all the other nations are around, and they all prayed tribute to him. And vayilechem Shlomo yom echad shloshim kar soled v'shishim kar kamach asara bakar b'riim v'esrim bakar ri'i u'me atzon v'vad ma'ayu tzvi v'yachmur b'abrim avusim. Every day in Shlomo's palace, he had 30 kor of fine flour and 16 kor of not fine flour, and he had 10 full, 10 fat bulls, cows, and then 20 smaller ones, and 100 sheep, plus assorted deer and venison and the like, and birds, but that was the food per day just for the palace. Now that money needs to come from somewhere, and that's what it says. Kihuro debachol aver hanahar mi tivsach v'adaza b'chol machayev and har v'shalom ayelom mikol v'rav misaviv, because he ruled everybody in at peace. So he had this huge infrastructure in Yerushalayim that was all at peace, and they were all enjoying themselves. But if you need to fund that, you need to set up a taxation system.
All Jewish here. He ruled also.
So he also ruled non-Jews, and he got, as it says, mincha from them. He got tribute from them. But a lot of his money just came from internal taxation. So most of his bureaucracy is actually these tax collectors. So that's what starts in Pasuk Hey. Now again, as we've seen with Shlomo, you're not going to hear about trouble now, right? Shlomo's life seems perfect for the first 10 prakim of Perek Gimel to Perek Yud of Sefer Malachim, but the heavy taxation of Shlomo is what's going to lead to the disintegration of the kingdom and the split of the kingdom under his son Rechavam. So again, this is one of those things that's going to be right now seems fine, or pariv, or whatever, but is going to, when you look back at it, be the beginning of the end. So, v'Azaryahu ben Natan al hanitzavim. So, Azaryahu ben Natan is in charge of these other representatives, which is later on, right? He's like the head tax collector. And Zavud ben Natan is the Re'eh HaMelech, which is his friend or confidant. And this seems to have been an official position in the ancient world. You get it in Avimelech has one, Yehuda has one. It's sort of like now in the White House, you have all these unnamed right? Cabinet members, the special advisor to the president, these people that he can just sort of talk to about things in general. So one of the people in the cabinet is this person without a specific, specific portfolio named Zavud bin Natan. Okay, and then the last ones are Achishar al Habayit. Achishar is the head of the household, whatever exactly. What's it called in English? There's a whatever he's the head of the whatever it is. Vadi Noram ben Avda al Hamas. He's the charge of the taxes. Azariah was in charge of the tax collectors, and he's in charge of not totally clear what the difference is, but okay. Lushlomo shneim asar nitzavim al kol Yisrael v'chil kolu et hamelech v'et beitel chodesh b'shana yeh al echad l'chalkel. Shlomo divided Israel into 12 tax regions, and each tax region would be responsible for 1 month of sustaining the king's household. Now, what's interesting in just a minute is, right, normally you see the Jewish people, you see the number 12, you just assume that it's Shvatim. What's very notable about Shlomo's division is it's not by Shevet, exactly. It's geographic. He just sort of divides the country into 12 geographic regions, which in many cases mostly overlap the Shvatim, but not entirely, because probably the Shvatim had different land masses and populations. So he didn't keep it exactly to the Shvatim, and you can see it, right? I brought, this is one of, you have the atlas.mikra also? Where's the...
You're going to find out in a second.
Yeah, I have one here in black and white, and then the color one is in the...
here.
Yeah, so you have it, right? He has these 12 units. You can see that some of them basically, you know, like Naphtali's portion basically covers most of Naphtali with a little bit of overlap into other places, and that's true of Asher as well. But there are certain people, certain Shvatim, like Ephraim, who actually is, you see how like in the middle of Har Ephraim over there, in Aleph, or whatever, and what I have here is Aleph.
Yeah.
So Ephraim's portion actually sort of spills over into four different tax regions. Right, Har Ephraim's in the middle of one, but along these periphery, he actually has portions in four different tax regions. And this really portends the real downfall, because the person who is going to take over the Malchut, right, Malchut Yisrael, who's going to split the kingdom from Rechavam, is Yeravam ben Nevat, who's from Ephraim. And he's going to complain about the taxation. Now, Ephraim, of all the Shvatim, is the one that suffers the most, because they get taxed in four different tax regions. So the Shevet gets taxed for a third of the year. So while most of the Shvatim, for the most part, end up within one, maybe two regions, Ephraim is the one that really gets messed over by this division. Now, there's basically two ways you could take this this division. One is to say that Shlomo really was trying to keep the Shevet division more or less. It's just that he had to account for differences in land and differences in population, so he had to redistribute a little bit, but basically he was trying to keep to the 12 Shvatim, in which case the fact that Ephraim gets messed over is just sort of an accident, but he was really trying to basically keep each region to a individual Shevet, and then, you know, with slight adjustments to equal out the areas. The other possibility is that this was intentional, right? That he intentionally didn't draw the lines by Shevet because he wanted to emphasize that his kingdom was a unified kingdom, not 12 different Shvatim who had sort of a weak confederacy, but a strong centralized government. In order to emphasize you have a strong centralized government, you can't say, well, each, you know, if You know, in Canada, you said each province, regardless of how many people you have, is responsible for providing the exact same amount of taxes to the federal government. It would be very much, you know, all the different provinces are individual governments, and they have certain responsibilities to the federal government, and they figure it out however they want, but none of them care. You know, Ontario doesn't care about Alberta. If you have a strong federal government, a strong central government, so then Shavit boundaries become less important. What becomes important is how does this factor into the national well-being. So some have claimed that Shlomo isn't just doing this for practical purposes, but he's actually doing this intentionally to break down the notion that the tribes are independent and not part of a greater whole. What's strange at the end is that when you count all of these, the first 12 actually divide the portion of 11 Shvatim. They don't divide Yehuda. Yehuda is left out. Which, if you wanted to read it cynically, you could say that maybe he didn't actually tax Yehuda, and that's why everyone gets really, really angry later, because he's taxing everybody and he's not taxing his own. As Yehuda Kill points out, both in Dot Mikra and in, he also wrote this, in the Atlas Dot Mikra, he finds that unlikely, because Shlomo is not stupid. Right? If you tax everybody heavily except for your own, that's going to be a disaster. And he suggests that Yehuda is just divided based on a different calculation, because there is actually a 13th tax collector at the end, whose role is not as spelled out as the original 12, so he assumes that that role is dividing up Yehuda so that it fits into this calculation. But then these are the names that you get. So it's Ve'elish Motam, Ben-Hur Bahar Ephraim. And so again, he's not in Ephraim, he's in Har Ephraim, which is this middle area over here. Ben-Deker B'makatz U'Veshalavim Ve'Chemesh Ve'Elon U'Beit Chanan, which is sort of over here on the coast, which again, you see is sort of a small geographic area, but presumably pretty wealthy because it's a trading port. It's on the water.
Number three is a lot.
Right. Then you have Ben Chesed Barubot Lo Socho Vichol Eretz Chefer. So this is Gimel. Also, it's a bit larger, but also borders on the water. Ben Avinadav Kol Nafat Dor Tafat Bashlomo Haitalo Liisha. And here was something that I find significant, though I haven't seen people really point out, is that the fourth tax collector is married to Shlomo's daughter. Right, he's a son-in-law. Which is, as I pointed out, sort of ironic, because Shlomo himself, I don't know if it's ironic, Shlomo himself never marries, as far as we know. I mean, maybe he did, but we don't find in Tanakh that he married any Jews. Right, he has political marriages with everybody else, but domestically, he marries people off and has these political marriages that consolidate his power within the country. So while he may not have married Jews because he needed to consolidate his power out, he marries off his children and then gives his, you know, I don't know which came first, right? Was this person in charge and then he married his daughter? Probably not. Right? Probably he gave him the job because he was his son-in-law, which again is another way of consolidating power. Bana ben Achilud Tanach u'Migido v'chol Beit Shan asher Eitzel Tzaratna mitachat liYisrael v'Beit Shan aravel mecholad ever liyak me'am. So that is over here, sort of the middle area, which you can see, like it's cut in a, you know, sort of an odd way. I tend to agree with it could be that both of them are right, that he's both trying to divide up the country equally financially and break Shavit lines. You know, you see sort of the logic of both. He is somewhat maintaining Shavit lines, but you know, it sort of makes sense financially what he's doing as well. I don't know if it might be a little bit of both, right? He's not sticking to Shavit lines to emphasize that it's unified, but he is somewhat sticking to Shavit lines because there's a logic to it. I don't know. And then Ben Gever Beramot Gilad Lo Chavod Yair Ben Menashe Asher Ba Gilad Lo Chevel Agov Asher Vasham Shishim Arim Gdalot Choma Uvriach Nechoshet. So he gets these 60 strong cities up in we're up to here, right? And now this is a very large land, but right, but most of the cities are focused over here, right? The 60 cities are over here, right? But geographically, it's a much bigger land mass, but it's more sparsely more sparsely populated, as we know, because, you know, 9.5 Shvatim are living on this side of the Jordan, only 2.5 on this side, so it's a much bigger portion of land. But it's probably similar demographically. Achinadav ben Edom, Achanaima, Achimatz ben Naphtali, Gamhula Gachet Basmat Shlomo Lisha. So then you get, you know, so you have in Machanaim, you have another person, and then in Achimatz in Naphtali, which is basically the portion of Naphtali. And again, here's another son-in-law, right? So here, of 12 so far, we haven't listed all of them, but two of them are already married to sons-in-law. Bana ben Chushi ba'asher uve'alot. So again, this one is mostly asher and then a little bit beyond asher, which again implies that he's trying to keep the Shvatim. Basically, Yoshafat ben Paroch b'Yisachar, where he seems to almost entirely be keeping to the portion of Yisachar right here in the middle. Shemi ven Eila b'vin Yamin, which is this portion over here, very small geographically, but significant. And Gever ben Uri b'Eretz Gilad, Eretz Sichon, Melech Ha'amoriv, Og Melech Mashanu Tzivechad, Asher ba'aretz. So this is again where we come up. We've counted 12, and you get to here, and you don't have Yehuda. Right? You don't have any Yehuda. Right? You've divided up into 12, but you've left out Yehuda. So again, it's possible that he really did leave out Yehuda, which would be a very, very bad move politically. Or the key to Yehuda is this last pasuk, where he appoints this nitziv echad asher ba'aretz. So the mefarshim again divide on exactly what this is. In the Gemara, they suggest that perhaps this this officer is appointed on dealing with the leap years, right? When you have 13 months, right? If each of them is responsible for a month, so then there's one portion that is only responsible for the leap years, which is very odd, because if that was true, you know, that really wouldn't be fair, right? 12 out of the 13 divisions pay taxes every year, and the other one pays taxes approximately 7 out of every 19 years, right? That's not going to breed happiness amongst your people.
Was Yehuda very, very
wealthy? And wealthy? They're wealthy. Presumably, they have a lot of people, right? They're a very large shevet. They're a very strong shevet. Presumably, they're
would he maybe have? Would that be maybe his private, whatever, whenever he needs to get money? Where he gets the money from.
Right. So it's possible. So the Dan Mikra, both in both of these, Yehuda Kill makes the argument that he thinks that it can't be that Shlomo didn't tax Yehuda. His proof, he has a double proof. First of all, he just said that's ridiculous. It's just a bad move. But even if you want to say, okay, maybe Shlomo made a bad move, his bigger proof is that when the people complain under Rechavam about the heavy taxation, they complain about the heavy taxation. They don't complain about nepotism, that he didn't tax Yehuda. If they're complaining about taxation, that's the first thing they're going to argue about. The fact that they don't even bring it up implies that Yehuda's being taxed like everybody else. So, which the second argument I find much more compelling. The first argument, you know, Shlomo makes mistakes. We know he makes mistakes. But the fact that nobody says anything, even when they're splitting from him, even when they're leaving Yehuda alone with Shlomo's son, implies that that's not their issue. The issue is just a heavy taxation. So
he actually writes something interesting. He said he didn't need some. He says what you say. Like the explanation of what he said is at the end. He did not need anybody in Yehuda because he was sitting there. He took care about himself. So that's why.
Right. So this is his theory in general. This is the Dat Mikra, right?
And that's the what's his name?
Which one? This is the.
Kasuto.
Oh, Kasuto. Yeah. So you know, again, I find that I find that compelling.
That's what I meant. Like it's
yeah, that he doesn't. Is it private?
He was responsible for it.
Right, and I find so either he's personally responsible, which is interesting. That's not the direction he takes, but it's possible. It's not, you know, it's very plausible, or you know, and this could work with that as well. Is what Yehuda Kill suggests is that in Tzivechad, might be the one in Yehuda, right? This Netziv Echad, he's the unique one. He's the special one. He's the one in charge of the capital.
He writes Netziv Echad is the one responsible for everybody.
Right. So that's country. That's the other possibility, right? The Netziv Echad could mean, right, that he's just the head of everything, right? He is the one, and so when Chazal talk about that he deals with the leap month, that means that he's in charge of everybody. So when there's a shortfall, because there's a 13-month year, then he has to figure it out. That's his job. He's the head of the treasury. He has to. So those are the two directions of Netziv Echad. Either Netziv Echad is this sort of head tax collector who either has to deal with a special region during the leap month, or more likely has to just arrange everything so that it works out. Or the way Yehuda Kill takes is that he's the Netziv in Yehuda. And maybe, like Kasuto says, maybe Yehuda doesn't need one. That doesn't mean they're not being taxed. It just means you don't need a tax representative. How exactly Yehuda paid, like what month did they pay? I don't know exactly how you would deal with it. Now, the way Yehuda Kill reads this in the pasuk, he says, Asher Ba'aretz. What is Netziv Echad Asher Ba'aretz? So according to Kasuto, it's in the whole land.
Yeah.
According to Yehuda Kill, it's Shlomo's land. Right? Everyone else is in the other portions. And there's one guy, Baretz, meaning Shlomo is basically in charge of it, but there's still someone practically who has to just go around and collect the money. He's not the, you know, it's sort of like Washington, D.C., right? Washington, D.C. is technically under the auspices of the president, but there's also a mayor who deals with the day-to-day, but technically the president is not part of a state, and therefore it's under the auspices of the White House directly. So, you know, it could be that this Netziv is sort of like that. He's the day-to-day person. Shlomo is the actual sovereign directly. So again, it's not the way Yehuda Kill wants to come up with it is to say that maybe the other 11 Shvatim are divided into 12 portions, and then Yehuda itself is also divided into 12 portions, and each of piece of Yehuda goes with one of the other Shvatim, and just it's divided separately because, you know, it's the portion of the king, because it's under his auspices. So I do find it compelling, like Yehuda Kill, that it can't be that he's not taxing Yehuda. How exactly he's taxing Yehuda? Is it that this Netziv Echad's in charge of Yehuda, and they divide Yehuda into 12 portions which go with the other ones? Is it that Shlomo himself is taxing them directly? Is it, you know, is that his special funds? Is that his, you know, slush fund? Is that his, you know, I don't know exactly how it works, but it seems clear that between either Shlomo himself or this Netziv, Yehuda is being taxed, and this Netziv, again, either may be the officer over the taxation in Yehuda, or he may be the head tax officer who has to work out the details when, you know, when the math doesn't work out for whatever reason, because there's an extra month. So Perek Dal, like I said, is not like a riveting Perek. It's listing names, but you actually get a lot of interesting details in terms of how Shlomo is dividing the kingdom. Is it intentional that he breaks up Shvatim because he's trying to unify Klal Yisrael, or is it just an accident that, you know, he wants to divide it by Shevet, but he needs to keep it economically sound, so he needs to play a little bit with the borders, noting that the beginning of his downfall starts here with Ephraim being unlucky enough to be in four tax districts, which means that, as we see with Yeravam, Ephraim and the Shvatim really did keep tribal identities. But if you manage to break down a tribal identity, so the fact that your Shevet gets taxed four times is irrelevant, it's just where you live. But if you don't break down tribal identities, then being taxed four times is brutal, and you see that they do keep their Shevet identity, and that becomes Yeravam's gripe, and he's the leader of the complaint against the taxes. We see that Shlomo, while he didn't marry Jews himself, or at least it's not explicit in Psukim, he does have political allies who are his sons-in-law, who are appointed, so he is solidifying power internally through marriages. Which, like, you know, like has always been done, basically.
Yeah, it's always in Canaan, but if he's not marrying Jewish, how are these officially his kids?
Well, he's converting them or whatever he's doing, but he's marrying the daughters of, and he's not marrying born Jews. He's marrying the daughters of other kings and, you know, whatever, converting them or whatever he's doing exactly. So we had, you know, of the 12, two of them are his sons-in-law. which is a decently high percentage. And we also saw that in his cabinet.
It's interesting because it doesn't say that he's only married to Bat Paro. So he must have.
He may marry Jews later, or he may, again, it's possible he married Jews. It's just we never find out about them, right? The Psukim hide that, right? The Psukim talk about he married Bat Paro, and then in Perek Yudalef, we know he married non-Jewish women.
A thousand wives. That's what they say, no?
Yeah. Look, it's logical to assume that some of them must have been Jewish, but the Psukim go out of their way to never tell you that he had any Jewish wives, right? Perek Gimel tells you he married Bat Paro. Perek Yudalef tells you that he was married to non-Jewish wives. Was he also married to Jewish wives? It's possible, but it never tells you, which is either because he wasn't or because that wasn't relevant to his story.
So this is not in order of the story. This is somewhere stuck in here and in between.
Presumably, obviously, right? I mean,
his son-in-law's...
Yeah, he must have been, he probably... He clearly got married and had kids, right? This is... A lot of years have passed. This is summarizing a period later. He's old enough to have married, had kids, who themselves got married. It's clear that we've jumped in time. This is projecting into the future. Yeah, Perek Dalet isn't in chronological order, exactly. Meaning it's correct. Summarizing his whole tax system and his, it's not perfectly in order. Presumably, he's getting married slowly, and Perek Yudalef summarizes what has happened in the whole period. When it happened, I have no idea. Marrying 1,000 wives, he had to, it takes
every
a long...
Day of wedding.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Every week.
It's crazy.
But those tax people, they had that for life, and nobody died.
Right, so I don't know. I don't know if this was his first one, his most important ones. I've got to assume that at some point in his life they died. So either this is outlining the beginning of it, though that means he...
It can't be the beginning. Be the beginning, because... His daughters were
no, right. I mean, not the beginning of his life. It could be that it could be that he collected taxes in a more haphazard way, and only later in his kingdom
he was here
fully established.
It can't be that he was so genius to try to do that when he was 50.
No, for sure.
Possible
this tax system is clearly well into his kingdom already. He's marrying these are his sons-in-law. He must a certain amount of years, more than a decade. Probably a decade and a half, maybe 2 decades have already passed by the time he has this tax system. I don't know exactly when this is. I don't know if this is the end of his life. This is when he came to his final sort of, it could be, the first 20 years of his kingdom, he collected taxes ad hoc, right? Or he collected taxes, I don't know how he collected taxes. The old-fashioned way, whatever it was, right? When he needed something, he sent out, okay, everybody's responsible. It could be that in the middle of his kingdom...
And then he changed...
Yeah, I don't know. Let me see if they say anything. Let's see. Yeah.
Old-fashioned way, I guess, was the Shvatim.
It was the Shvatim, or I don't know exactly, but it's
David the Melech didn't use this.
Yeah. Let's see. Does he say anything?
What was the old-fashioned way?
Yeah, they don't deal with it. It's an interesting question. I don't know if we have an answer. It's got to be at least 15, 20 years into his malchus.
Did it say anything in David's period? Did he collect taxes?
He did collect taxes, but nothing like this. There was no established way. It was much more...
Who was the king that increased taxes?
Shlomo. Shlomo was known for it.
He didn't listen to the elders, but he listened to the young.
His son, Rechavam. Right? Meaning that's part of it.
Taxes. This is already seems to be quite heavy.
Exactly. And that's what they complain about, right? What's going to happen in Rechavam's time is everyone's going to complain and say, your father taxed us too much.
He's going to say,
instead of lowering the taxes, he'll say, I'm going to raise the taxes. Brilliant. Just great idea. Great idea.
Hold on a second. That's Imana from the road.
Okay.
Imana is in Imshiur, Bobish. Imshiur. You crossed the border. 10, 1?
10
Okay, very good. Try carefully. Okay, right. Take a break. Okay, ciao. Simone is driving home from Chicago alone.
I got it. Okay, yeah, so again, I assume this is either in the middle or towards the end of his kingdom, the fully established version, and until then, probably, yeah, however David collected taxes and Shaul collected taxes, they collected taxes. The novelty of Shlomo is that at some point in his kingdom, 10, 15, 20 years in, he manages to set up this very well-organized tax-collecting machine, and nobody complains at the beginning. The reason no one complains at the beginning is the next pasuk, is Yudav Yisrael Rabim Kachol Asher Layam Larov Ochlim V'Shotim U'Smechim. It's because everyone was numerous and wealthy. If everyone's rich under Shlomo, he's brought prosperity. So it was.
And you only tax once a year.
So yeah, you tax one a year, and you know it's like with Paro, with Red Paro and Yosef, which is the last time we have something that's organized during the 7 years of plenty. No one complained. Yosef was this person who predicted the wealth, and they're collecting the wealth, and no one feels it because they're so wealthy. Then, when times are bad, they start feeling it. So, Pasuk Chaf tells you, on the one hand, yes, Shlomo is successful. On the other hand, it may be hinting to his downfall, which is saying, this is objectively a lot of taxation. The reason no one's upset now is because they're eating, drinking, and they're, you know, they're happy. Take that away, things start to go sour. You can't leave that tax system in place. Right now, no one's thinking about it because they're so much richer than they were before. But eventually, it catches up with you.
He also said, interestingly, the territories that were conquered are also not mentioned. He said they for sure pay taxes as well.
Right, so it just mentions that.
Mentioned, but the
Right, it just mentions that there were minchas coming in, but it doesn't explain how. But right? It's not these.
But
right?
He writes that money was also raised from those territories that they conquered.
Right, and I mean, we had a pasuk like that, that they get, or the, right after this, right, that he gets mincha. It's the next pasuk. It's pasuk, it's Perakei, pasuk Aleph. The last thing just to note on this pasuk is that this is the first time when we actually see in fruition the promise of Avram. Right, Shlomo is the, as we've mentioned before, the climax. Yeah, there's Kachol Asher Alayam, right? This is when it happens, under Shlomo.
This is the only one that it appears.
Yeah, this is the only time. This is it. Like, this is the climax. This is when, you know, and this is, we'll just finish with the next pasuk, which is the first pasuk in Aleph. First pasuk and hey is Ushlomo Hayam Moshe B'chol Ma'achod Min Haresh Plashtim V'Adgul Mitzrayim Magishim Minchav Ovdim Et Shlomo Kol Mechayav. And in addition to all that money, he had all the countries paying tribute and working for Shlomo their whole life. So in addition to all the money that he's raising internally, he has all these tribute coming in from outside. So again, this shows the success of Shlomo in terms of bringing prosperity, having a non-war focused economy. But on the other hand, it lays the groundwork for his downfall because it's heavy taxation. People are seemingly only not complaining because right now they're all rich and happy, but it is objectively high taxes, and that'll eventually come back to bite him. And very specifically, Yeravam from Ephraim will be the one who leads the charge because they sort of got the short end of the stick here because they get taxed four times over. So again, it's not like a riveting paragraph, but if you look at the details, it does set a lot of the groundwork for Shlomo's Malchus throughout.